Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder. Ooh, ooh, and rock and roll. Hey, hey, hey. The spell you run will be broken by Chris Jericho. And guess what? It's Friday.
It's Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Somebody's gonna get their ass kicked. Somebody's gonna get their wig split. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck, break his neck. Beat him up, beat him up, break his neck. Neck. Woo! All right. Talk Is Jericho coming at you live. I did a little survey on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho and asked all of you what was your favorite cowbell song, and a lot of you said the Mark Henry theme. Now, I try and actually use songs that have cowbell in them. People are like, why don't you do For Whom the Bell Tolls or Master Puppets or, you know, Helter Skelter or whatever. You can't do those songs because there's no cowbell in them. So either I make the songs up like Mark Henry, or like the Talk Is Jericho theme, which I forgot how it goes already, or I use actual cowbell songs like Don't Fear the Reaper, Working for the Weekend, you know, whatever other ones I've done, Mississippi Queen, Think About You, Walk This Way, kind of all those tunes that have cowbell in them. So if you know any more cowbell songs that I haven't done yet, shoot them to me at Talk Is Jericho on the Twitter. So I can play them for you. Got a big, big day today. Part two of my conversation with Batista's coming up. You know, crazy story. Vince McMahon once fined him a huge amount of money for something that we did in a cage match. You're not going to believe how much money Vince fined him. I'm not going to spoil it for you. We'll tell it to you during the conversation. But that story alone is worth the price of admission. Yeah, I was a part of it. I was there, sitting right there. It's a crazy story. You'll hear Batista's side of it coming up. So many great stories. You know how humble Dave is and how well-spoken he is. So really excited for part two, as I'm sure you are as well. Also excited because I was telling you on Wednesday about the albums I recently ordered on Amazon using the Talk Is Jericho link, of course. I invite you to do the same. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. It's the easiest way to support the show. Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase just back to the show to help us cover production costs and all that other stuff. And I use the link to pick up a few new Rhino Records releases. These are all very Fruit special edition reissues. I've been telling you about them the last couple weeks. I got Deep Purple's Concerto album. This is the band and the album that inspired Metallica and Kiss and Scorpions to perform with symphony orchestras. Very, very amazing. Such a sonically cool sounding record. Deep Purple played with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, one of the best in the world at what they do. Remember? See what I did there? They did it back in 1969 as well. I mean, that is 45 years ago, man. First rock band to do something like that. Anyways, I picked it up on vinyl. I also got Deep Purple's Made in Japan, one of the best live albums of all time. It's on the lists, all the lists, like Rolling Stone and Lars Ulrich will say that. A lot of people finally picked it up, and man, what a band. The fact they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame makes me very angry. But you go check out Made in Japan. You'll see the reason why. I picked it up. I got the special edition reissue. I already played you some snippets from songs on that record. Definitely on my top 10 greatest live album list in the short time that I've had it. And I've been telling you how I took a chance on Jethro Tull as well due to the fine folks at Rhino. They just released a really cool special edition 5.1 surround mix of Passion Play. Never was into Tull when I was growing up, but a Passion Play was a number one record for them, so I figured, okay, I'll give it a shot, and guess what? It kicks ass. It's really grown on me. Very, very cool album from a very, very cool band. I'm digging it. Also funny that Jethro Tull won the Grammy for Best Heavy Metal Band in 1989 for Crest of a Knave, and they beat out Metallica. And the next year, Metallica won the Grammy, and Lars' speech was, I just want to thank Jethro Tull for not releasing a record this year. So there you go. That was my experience with Jethro Tull until now. Passion Play. Very, very cool record from Rhino Records reissuing it. I'm going to play a little clip from the record. This is a little ditty called The Foot of Our Stairs.
Well, I'll go to the foot of our stairs. Jack Rabbit messed up. Spawned a new breed of love-hungry pilgrims, nobody's to feed. Show me a good man and I'll show you the door. The last hymn is sung and the devil cries more.
Wow! You hear it, right? That's Jethro Tull. Ian Anderson playing rock and roll flute. That rules. That's from their number one record, A Passion Play. Just picked up the special edition version of that Rhino released. Finally gave Jethro Tull a chance, and I'm glad that I did. So if you're looking for some cool tunes to check out, you can't go wrong with either of those records, any of those records. And of course, you get them all at Amazon. If you do use Amazon, please link to it through Talk is Jericho. You know it helps me out. Help me to help you to continue to do this show for you for free twice a week. Just go to podcast1.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Thanks again for supporting the show, supporting my sponsors. I love hanging out with you guys twice a week, and let's keep the ball rolling, people! All right, was not on Raw last week, as you can tell. I was off, had a little vacation, and then headed over to Los Angeles to film Code 5, the new web series for Comedy Central, the amazing channel. It's all things fun, all things comedy. Got this gig through But I'm Chris Jericho. They found me somehow and offered me this part, which is great, as you heard in part one of my Batista extravaganza. I am not good at auditioning. I hate auditioning. But when I'm offered the role, I usually can do my thing and kick some ass on it. And that's what's going on now, getting ready to film it. Starting this afternoon, the next 3 days, we're filming 6 episodes. And it's basically an ipso facto pilot for Comedy Central. So fingies crossed. But do not despair, Y2J, WWE fans. I will be back on Raw this Monday for a highlight reel with my longtime rival, Randy Orton. I'll also be at SmackDown in Lincoln, Nebraska. So come on down. Come check me out. And let me know what you think of all my cool things. New Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? We are going on tour September 17th with Theory of a Dead Man. I want to point out that we're supporting Theory on all the shows except for September 18th in Abilene at the Lucky Mule with Avatar. Come check us out, all you fine Abilene people. September 25th in Beckley, West Virginia, returning to Munchies. Loved playing Munchies last time. September 28th, Parkersburg, West Virginia at the Sixpence. That's on the border of Ohio. You know who you are if you live there. October 1st, Fort Wayne, Indiana at Pierre's. And the return to the Gramercy Theater, New York City, October 5th. So come check us out with Theory of a Dead Man. And if you live in the areas I just told you, come check us out for headlining Fozzy shows. All right. Okay. So I was on Netflix earlier this week looking for, I can't remember what I was looking for. And Netflix, if you can't find something that you want to watch, one thing leads to another. I ended up checking out Quentin Tarantino. I was trying to watch True Romance. They didn't have it, so I watched Jackie Brown. And it made me realize how underrated that movie is in the Tarantino pantheon. Just a great, great cast of characters. Cool story, obviously based on an Elmore Leonard novel called Rum Punch. So Tarantino just did an adaptation of the script, which means he just kind of rewrote what was already there. But just a great cast. Like Bridget Fonda, how hot was she? Whatever happened to her, man? Bridget Fonda, if you're out there listening, which I'm sure you are, Papa Jericho wants to say hello and have some hibbity-dibbity, hibbity-dibbity, hibbity-dibbity. Well, at least some fantasy hibbity-dibbity. De Niro, I forgot De Niro was in that. Of course, Samuel Jackson, Tarantino's muse for so many of the great dialogue that he writes. You know, so I just wanted to kind of go through and find out what Tarantino's doing now and found out he's doing a movie called The Hateful Eight. Now, the teaser is out now. You can go find that on YouTube. But it was leaked, and Tarantino's had a lot of problems with this because earlier this year, the script leaked for Hateful Eight, and Tarantino canceled the project and planned on just working as writing it as a novel instead. I guess he got out of his hissy fit and then went on a legal tear. All the sites that posted a download of the script, a free download, were sued by Tarantino for $1 million in statutory and punitive damages. And then he started to make the movie, or he's going to make the movie, and then the trailer came out. Now we're worried that he's going to have another fit and cancel this project as well. But it looks pretty cool, typical Tarantino. Seven bounty hunters, I guess, are gathered together in a house and to see who lasts. But Samuel Jackson, Bruce Dern, Michael Madsen, Walter Goggins, James Remar, Kurt Russell, all of Tarantino's usual suspects rumored to be involved in this. Apparently, it's going to come out December of 2015. Synopsis is, The Hateful Eight follows a steadily ratcheting tension that develops after a blizzard diverts a stagecoach from its route and traps a pitiless and mistrustful group, which includes a competing pair of bounty hunters, a renegade Confederate soldier, and a female prisoner in a saloon in the middle of nowhere. So that's what Tarantino is working on now, which is cool. It's been a while since Django came out, but let's go through some of his movies. Let's go through all of his movies. Death Proof with stuntman Mike, Kurt Russell's best character. A little bit verbose and probably the quote-unquote worst of Tarantino's eight movies, but still a great, great piece of filmmaking. Awesome dialogue and some tremendous female cast members in there. Definitely worth checking it out. I can't remember her name. It was Rose McGowan was in there. Lots of cool girls. I can't remember what the other girl's name was. Rosario Dawson, that's her name. I knew it. But really, really cool movie. A little bit kind of verbose. And like I said, if that's the worst movie in your pantheon, then it's not a bad movie to be boasting. Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2. I liked Volume 2 better, because I think more of the story was answered. I think it moved along better. Part one, though, still pretty cool. Lots of good scenes with the Pussy Wagon and that whole story there. And just the slaughter of the crazy 88s. Over the top, definitely inspired by the Shaw Brothers, Chinese filmmakers from the late 60s, early 70s. And that's one thing about Tarantino. Very cool. Always great soundtracks and cool little tricks and homages to his heroes of the past. I would like to see the entire version. I think it's called The Whole Bloody Mess of Kill Bill 1 and 2, kind of all stitched together from beginning to end. There was rumors of a Kill Bill 3, but apparently Tarantino is not going to do that. But then again, he wasn't going to do Hateful Eight when that script leaked, so he's probably a pretty secretive guy. Reservoir Dogs, classic. My old acting coach, Kirk Baltz, played Marvin Nash, the guy whose ear gets cut off. Another great cast with tremendous dialogue. Tim Roth, an early Tarantino favorite. Michael Madsen, Harvey Keitel, another Tarantino favorite. Everybody's seen that one. Just a crazy story there about how, I think it was when Tim Roth turns on everybody, and it's just very well written. We talked about Jackie Brown. I love the fact that they all wear those Kangol hats. Like, there's one scene where Jackie Brown's talking to Ordell, Samuel Jackson. He's wearing a Ordell hat. He's wearing a He's wearing a Kangol hat and a Kangol shirt. She's wearing a Kangol hat. It's like, was Kangol was sponsoring this? Too many Kangols. But once again, just great acting. Michael Keaton was awesome in that as well. Inglourious Basterds. I don't know. Could be my favorite Tarantino movie. I mean, you got the magical three of Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained, and Pulp Fiction. Now, Pulp Fiction was so awesome. I mean, what can you say that hasn't been said about that movie? Tremendous acting, great story, resurrected John Travolta's career, made Samuel Jackson, made Tim Roth. Christopher Walken was great in it. Bruce Willis was amazing in it. So many killer actors. Ving Rhames. And then they kind of set the bar for all future Tarantino movies, which in my opinion wasn't matched until Inglourious Basterds came out. And that's when Christopher Waltz was introduced in the scene, who I think is the best deliverer of that Tarantino dialogue. You know, Samuel Jackson is close, but Waltz just relishes those amazing lines that Tarantino writes and just delivers them so amazing, so killer. Eli Roth, Bearju, just kicked ass in that. I love the fact that Eli Roth got to kill Hitler. We talked about that on Talk is Jericho when Eli was a guest. Brad Pitt was killer in that. And then, of course, Django Unchained, another tremendous movie in the Tarantino list of films. Jamie Foxx, but DiCaprio was killer in that. Don Johnson was amazing. Christoph Waltz. You got to see these movies. I mean, if you're a movie buff and you haven't seen Django Unchained and Glorious Bastards and Pulp Fiction, go watch all three of them now and then work your way through all of the Tarantino movies. His dialogue, the way he sets up his shots. So many cool things to talk about with Tarantino. There's a great story about Tarantino in my new book as well. When I went to Eli Roth's house to watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with Tarantino and Eli. And Tarantino was one of those guys that you just want to throw popcorn at in the theater and say, shut up! Quit making all these ridiculous trivia comments. These flies were imported from South Africa, and Sergio Leone brought them in because they're bigger flies than what was available in Mexico. It's like, you know, what are you talking about? Like, quiet, Tarantino. But, crazy genius, great movie. Hateful Eight. We will keep you abreast of the situation, and we'll keep you abreast of the situation with Batista. He'll be here pretty soon. Looking forward to having him.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, Dave Bautista's back for part two here on Talk is Jericho. He's had a crazy summer promoting his hit movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, Dave, you took some time off from WWE to promote the film. Are you planning on coming back to WWE?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. I want to go back. Mm-hmm. I miss it. I love it. They need to work with me on creative mm-hmm. stuff, man. I'd like to have more creative control, man, because some of the stuff, it's like sometimes they argue with you just to argue with you mm-hmm. when you know this is the route we should be going, and we end up going that route anyway, but right. It's usually like 3 weeks too late.
Yes.
So I'm going to, I want to go back, but
You still love the business.
I love it, man. Yeah. I love it. I always tell people I'd take a house show any day over a TV show. Mm-hmm. I love house shows, man, because you just go out there, you do your thing, man. You interact with people, and you get to take your time. You don't have to worry about commercial breaks or somebody in the ref's ear telling you to go home, to go home 10 minutes early.
And that's I appreciate about you, and I do the same thing. When I come back, mm-hmm. when you come back, we're back.
Right.
You know, like yeah. I just came back from Australia a few days ago, and I think it was Cesaro. Something. We're so happy that you came on the tour. It's like, yeah. Well, yeah. Why wouldn't I? But a lot of guys don't.
I don't get that. You know? And I've heard, I won't mention those guys, but yeah. when I hear the guys who say they'll only do one TV show a week, they're not going to do house shows, they're not going to try, I just don't get that, man.
It doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, and I don't get it because that's the good stuff.
Yeah, that's the fun part. Yeah. I mean, you go on a WWE tour overseas, mm-hmm. that's when the one time when it is like being in a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Everything's taken care of and the catering is there and you get picked up and dropped off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the dessert.
That's the rock star experience.
Yeah, exactly. You that's where you have some fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but let's talk about, you know, the before you left and I mean, you came in the business, you know, probably maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
But you started fairly late.
I started real late.
You know, I mean, I think you're probably early 30s, right?
I was, but by the time I made it to TV, I think I was, I may have been 33.
In wrestling terms, that's like ancient, that's old. You know? At that point, like I'd been doing it for 14 years at that point.
Ancient. Oh, wow.
In like wrestling terms.
Walk in a, like a mummy garb.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh man, the mummy. Yeah.
So how did you, what made you decide to finally get into the business?
I got in for all the wrong reasons.
All the wrong reasons?
Yeah, well, no, I always tell people because I got in originally, and it's not a very glamorous answer, but originally I got in to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know much about pro wrestling. I was a fan in the early 80s. I was a fan of the Attitude Era,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know anything about it. You know, I wasn't a hardcore fan. I was, you know, when We talked about this. You know, I loved you in WCW just because you were just so quirky,
idiot.
Man.
Moron.
But I loved it. It was so entertaining. But So I got in it because I was broke, man. I was, you know, closing in on 30. I had two kids and I was still bouncing for, you know, $100 a night or whatever.
You start realizing, this ain't cool.
I don't have any insurance. I, you know, my kids get sick. What the hell am I going to do? And, you know, I had nothing.
Right.
The original reason I got into it. I started to pursue it, and I went and had this awful tryout with the WCW, and they ran me out the door and
really?
Told me to never come back.
Where did you go?
Power plant.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I went down the power plant.
You just showed up?
No, they were having open tryouts. Okay. You know, you go and pay your, I think it was like $300, which to me at the time was a lot of money. So I went down. Yeah, it was Sarge, man. It ran me off. It was like the first day. And I went down there, I was like 340 pounds, I was all jacked up, went down with a buddy of mine, and he jumped right in our faces, man, and just got on us, man. He wanted nothing more than to run us out the door.
I just had Chael Sonnen on my show, and he had a WCW tryout too, and same thing, Sarge ran him out the door. Get out of here.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew he was a huge fan, but.
Same thing as you. It's funny because Sarge seems like he made some bad decisions in both those cases.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, how his career ended up.
exactly. Yeah. Wondering what he's doing now. He was, you want fries with that?
He was just kind of a bitter little troll.
Bitter actually little played troll one, I think. He was the original leprechaun, I think. he was not a very happy person, I'll tell you that much.
No.
And so you get kicked out of there, and then what happens after that?
And then I was bummed out for a few days and heartbroken, and my buddy of mine, you know, Jonathan, mm-hmm. Meisner, who's my best friend in the world,
mm-hmm.
Started making some calls for me. And he ended up, he made some calls to the WWE, still WWF at the time. And they weren't having tryouts or anything, but they sent me to Offa. They said, well, you might want to try this place out. And it was Offa, the Wild Samoan. And we drove up there and talked to Offa, and he was, you know, right off the bat.
I didn't know that. I forgot that you had trained with
him. Yeah, so I broke in with Offa.
So many guys now too with the Usos and Roman all related to Alpha.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like all every Samoan guy is related one way or another.
Yeah. They're all good. That's my cousin.
Yeah, exactly. Is it really
they
your cousin?
They just met
that?
Yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Somewhere, somehow there's a relation somewhere. So what led you to WWE? Because things were different. Yeah. There wasn't an NXT back then. Or
no,
was...
so then I trained with Offa for about a year in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then he was actually the one who worked out a tryout for me to go out to the company. And then I went went up there and got in the ring with Dr. Tom for a little bit. And and Bruce called me the next day. He said, you know, we'd like to offer you a contract. And I was like, wow, man, I gotta figure this out. And talked. I was, you know, married at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to my wife. He goes, well, there's nothing really to talk about. This is the offer. And let us know by tomorrow if you want it or not. So it was an offer for like $600 a week.
Right.
To go to.
And an opportunity.
An opportunity, your foot in the door, and to go to Memphis and wrestling. And literally, like, I think like 3 days before we were supposed to go to Memphis, they said, well, we're actually going to need you to go to Louisville.
Oh, okay.
So, we went to Louisville, packed up our stuff, and
And just to show the difference too, Sarge ran you out and Dr. Tom worked with you and got you a contract. And that, you know, Dr. Tom is one of the most underrated guys as far as finding talent and being just a tremendous worker. You know?
And you know what we did, man? We went up there, we locked up, and we, you know, we rolled around the ring a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, never even hit the mat. Never even hit the mat. He just wanted to see if I had a little bit of athletic ability.
Just wanted to see what you were doing. Yeah.
And that was it, man. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of money, but like you said, man, it was opportunity.
The opportunity. Yeah,
yeah, that's a big word in the company.
It is. Hey, back in the old days, before there was guaranteed contracts, that's all you got was an opportunity.
Yeah.
You get a contract for, I think it was like for 10 guaranteed TV tapings at like $200 a shot.
Right.
There you go. $2,000 guaranteed.
Man. Yeah. Take it and run.
I remember when you first came into the WWE, you were Deacon Batista, Reverend Devon, right?
Yeah.
The best part of all was, I remember like, oh my God, look at that guy, he's a big guy. And they had you in a full suit. And you would hold Devon's money case or whatever it was, money tray.
Like a money box.
Money box.
So ridiculous.
And then they finally, they covered up your entire body with the suit.
Yeah, it was, I think, you know, there's a reason they did that. But at the time, they told me to get this, they go out and get a suit. And we literally spent all, you know, I mean, we dug up our money and scrounged together money to go out and buy the suit.
Oh, yeah.
And I show up with it. I, you know, I'm like a happy kid, show up with my suit. And they start cutting it up. And I was like... But that suit, it cost me $500.
That's all I got.
it was all I got. I was literally broke. I was broke and borrowing money until I won my first heavyweight title in 2005.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Nah, I wasn't making any money, man.
Because, Dave, that was probably 2002 or 3 when you debuted as Deacon Batista, right?
It was May of 2002.
3 years?
Yeah. I was struggling, man. Yeah, I just wasn't making any money.
See, there's another... You know, kind of the real behind the scenes of people that would think, oh, you're in the WWE, you must be, you know, making huge money. But that's not the case.
No.
A lot of expenses.
I had a really low guarantee. And I was, until then, I was pretty much a guy who was, you know, walking in carrying a box. You know,
was it that long you were the box carrier?
I was a box carrier until 2000. Sometime in 2003 when they decided to form Evolution, and then not long after that I was injured and I was out for a while.
Right.
And my guarantee was really, really low. So I was actually, I came back to work owing the company money.
That was a crazy night. You got injured. Didn't you and Randy get injured the same day?
Match, yeah.
Same match?
Yeah. I blew out my tricep and he broke his foot.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are the what
And
are
then
the
Bubba yelled at us.
he
yelled at us because he strained his back or something, and he was pissed at us.
You rookies?
I'm sitting there, my arms dangling. Randy can't walk. He's getting stretchered off in an ambulance, and Bubba's yelling at us.
Yeah, that's funny. But so, yeah, you were out for a while on that one.
Yeah, I was out for a while because I actually tore my tricep, then retore it.
Wow, that's right. Because remember, you came and saw us. At a Fozzie show we did like in Springfield, Virginia, because you live in Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
Weren't you all like running or something and you
fell
down?
Yeah, I was all gung-ho about getting back in shape. And so I used to do these wind sprints where I would sprint, 30 yards and come back and walk back and sprint them again. And I literally just slipped and I landed and caught myself on my arm and it went pop.
It didn't hurt or anything.
And I was like, but I knew, I mean, it just, the screw had just popped right back out, man. So they just had to go in and reinsert it. Yeah.
How do you tell Vince McMahon that?
Yeah, it was, I thought for sure I was fired, man. I thought for sure.
Because at that point in time, you really hadn't established yourself.
Not at all. I wasn't established, and I was still pretty rotten. Yeah. I was still pretty
rotten. But one of the reasons I think that's why they formed Evolution in the first place was for you and Randy specifically to learn.
Yeah.
How did they approach you and tell you about that?
It was weird, man, because me and Randy, you know, we heard about it. We only talked to each other about it. You know, we got all excited, but otherwise we just say, yeah, we're too cool for school. I don't know, man. If it happens, it happens. But we were all like little
kids.
There's
a crazy Randy at the time. He was so nuts back then.
Oh, my gosh, so amped up.
Always yelling and freaking out, temper tantrums.
Because people, you know, he's changed a lot, but people don't see how much he's changed. They still, you know, see, because he's still a little bit, you know, a little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
So I was like, if you knew Randy 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I think I almost got a fight with him three or four times. Yeah.
He's just, you know, that's just who he is, man. I've never known him to be any. I accept him for who he is. He's just a hothead, and that's just who he is. But,
right.
Yeah, so we were all amped up about it. But Hunter finally came up and talked to us about it. And he kind of warned us ahead of time, you know, you guys are going to get a lot of heat for this. You're going to think you're sucking up to us. And, He was like, are you here to make friends? Or are you here to make money? You know, the typical Triple H speech.
Now, why did he think you guys were going to get heat for it?
I think just because I think he knew that it was going to put us right in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And it was really kind of off riding, you know, their coattails, Rick and, right. and Hunter. So I think that was it. But he just kind of gave us, you know.
So what did you learn from working with those guys? I mean, because the thing is, no, one more question, yeah. too. Was Jindrak originally involved in that as well?
He was actually, they were considering him replacing me when I was out injured.
Oh.
And I think that was, you know, it was Hunter again, who's just, he didn't want, you know, he wanted it to be the four of us. He was pretty adamant about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he fought for us because they, first thing, you know, I get injured because Randy was back before I was, and they mm-hmm. wanted that fourth member, and they were, you know, that's who they were talking around. They wanted to replace me with Jindrak.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just weird now when you think about
it. Yeah, in retrospect, huh? Yeah. But I mean, like I said, I mean, the way that, I mean, let's be honest, the way that you looked, I mean, you had this amazing look.
Yeah, I was the muscle.
Well, the muscle, but yeah. also too, I mean, just like the fact, are you half Filipino, half?
Yeah, half England? Filipino, half Greek.
I mean, half yeah. Greeks. I mean, yeah. you got this real exotic look.
Yeah.
I remember. I don't know why I know this. I'm not sure. I was always snooping around back then, but I think because they were thinking about what to call you,
right.
and Vince loved Batista.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that name, Batista. Yeah. That was back when everyone was getting different names.
Do you know when the first time that I ever came out with D-Von,
mm-hmm.
and he, you know, introduced me to everybody, but he said my name wrong. He had to go back up and dub it. He'd do a voice.
What did he call you?
He called me like Bastida or something like that. He couldn't pronounce my name.
It's Bastida.
Deacon Bastida.
You're lucky that you can keep it as that.
I know.
But Vince, you said it wrong. No, I didn't. It's Bastida. Right. I changed it.
Yeah. But do you remember? I don't know if you ever heard this, but the original storyline, you know, when Rick, you know, came up and started, I was always angry. That was my gimmick. I was angry. I was pissed off about everything. Nobody ever knew what. And Rick started, you know, to take me under his wing. But the original idea for that storyline was supposed to be that I was always pissed off because I was a rape child.
What?
I was a rape child. My mother was raped. I was, you know, a rape child without a father, and I was just hateful of everybody. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That
shows you how much the company has changed.
Sure, exactly, right? I think that was probably around the same time we were doing the nymphomania, or what's it called when you, necrophilia?
Oh, right,
remember
right.
that? Yeah, necrophilia? Glenn, right? Cain had screwed right. a, or oh, whatever Jesus. It was, screwed a dead
was
girl.
Was it Vicky? What was the name of that?
Katie Vick.
Katie Vick, right.
Katie Vick, so yeah, so we had Cain, the necrophiliac, and Batista, the rape child.
Yeah.
Actually, also known as a bastard.
Right, which, right. When yeah, I, the bastard rape child.
When I worked with Punk a couple of years ago, we were doing this thing where I was, you know, I was saying that Punk's dad was an alcoholic and right. Punk's mother was a drug addict right. and all this stuff. And Vince told me to call Punk, and then I want you to call him a bastard. And I was like, why? He goes, that's a bastard. It can't get any worse than being called a bastard.
And he gets all, he says it all deep. A bastard. You call him a bastard.
Nothing more than a bastard.
Nothing worse than a bastard.
He
gets so into it.
Yeah,
it's so bad. It's like, it's so cheesy.
Worst insult ever, right?
Yeah. You always know, like, when you get handed a promo, you always know the Vince lines.
Oh,
and he always is very adamant about getting those lines. He wants... Really? Now Vince really wants this in there.
So. Yeah, it's like, you know, I'll take it. I'm going to change all this. Well, don't change this line and this line. And he's like, because you denigrated the, you know, it's like, denigrated? Who uses that word? It's a Vince word. Okay. You denigrated the flag, Batista, or whatever. So.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Talk is Jericho.
Man, so we're here sitting with my old bud, Dave, man. So Evolution obviously was a huge break for you, and you got to learn from two of the best ever in Triple H and in Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And that's when you really started coming into your own.
Right, right. And that, yeah, and it was really just, and that's exactly what it was. It was, you know, after the show, man, we'd ride down the road and I would pick their brain. I'd be that annoying guy in the back asking question after question after question after question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was really all based around the psychology of wrestling. Mm. You know, because I mean, everybody's aware that I'm not the best wrestler.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But I just started to pick up a sense of the crowd and what they wanted and when they wanted it. You know, it's kind of the psychology.
When you started, you might not have been the best wrestler, but yeah. I always remember having great
matches. No, we had great matches, but really was, I was chemistry. Just never, you know, I was never the most, you know, physically talented guy. But I just really started to pick up on, and that was more of what I was interested in, was the psychology of wrestling. You know, what made sense.
And the character.
Yeah, character. You're storytelling,
always,
man.
Yeah, right. And that's the true essence and secret of being a big-time, big guy, big main event wrestler, absolutely. Main event performer.
Absolutely.
Moves are great,
right?
But they're secondary to
absolutely
charisma and psychology.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people don't, you know, some people don't get that, and maybe some people won't agree. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's what it is. That's the art of professional
wrestling.
Well, we're
world champions with probably a dozen world championships, so we're right and they're wrong.
When I get, you know, when I get grief from, you know, certain smarks or just so negative about everything, it's like, I've worked with this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And they've all respected me, but because you,
yeah.
you think I'm the shits, and that, that your opinion is supposed to matter to me?
Yeah.
You know, come on, man.
So what did, when you guys broke up with Evolution, I mean, was the first real kind of big, big thing is when you and Triple H headlined WrestleMania? That was 05, I think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was
but,
pretty
I mean,
big.
You know, there was stuff leading up to that. You know, there was, you know, I had good runs with you. I had good runs with Sean. I mean, there was stuff leading up to that. But that was what really set me on my own as a, you know, as a single
That was
performer.
Actually a big drawing.
Yeah, and it was.
Pay-per-view, too.
That was, and that was another thing, man. It was, I got to give credit to Hunter for that because he thought that all out. And, you know, right after we had the first thing where we teased us turning on each other, like Vince wanted us having the match the next week, and Hunter just fought and fought and fought for us not to have a match until we got to Mania. They wanted to build it and build it and build
and
it.
That
really
was a 3-4 month long.
Yeah,
thing.
It was a real old school long buildup, and it just worked, man. Everybody got sucked into it and kind of got emotionally invested in it.
And drew really well.
It drew really well, man. We did good numbers, good, real good business.
Hunter used to get a lot of flack and grief back in those days,
yeah,
because he was just starting to. Not take over WWE, but you could see where it was going. He was married to Stephanie, and everyone thought Vince was in his back pocket, which is not the case. I think Vince is probably more hard on him than anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, for
but
sure.
He always was, you know, he did what was best.
Yeah,
you know,
he was even after they got married. I still remember him and Vince going back and forth and disagreeing. Yeah, that wasn't by any means true that Vince.
Same
Vince
thing
was in
now.
His back pocket. I think you're right. I think a lot of time, you know. You know how Vince is, man. Vince is, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll disagree with you just to prove that he he's got the last word.
Well, this is a crazy story with dealing with Vince and you and I. It happened here in Tampa. How crazy was that?
Yeah.
This is.
You want to tell the story?
Let's tell it.
Let's tell it.
I wrote about it in my book, so people are going to hear about it pretty soon anyways. But so we're in Tampa, and the idea was I was the world champ. I had a lot of heat with the fans, as a big heel.
Right.
And we did the, what was it called, Taboo Tuesday or Cyber Sunday.
Yeah.
And the idea was that the fans would pick the referee.
Right.
And Vince said to me, listen, we want to put Dave over because we want people to know that when they invest in this pay-per-view that their opinion counts.
Right.
But you'll win it back.
We'll give it right back to you.
The next week in Tampa in a cage match.
Right.
So we get to the Tampa for the cage match.
Right. And which was, we had a great match.
Yeah, we did.
It was a great win. I was, you know, of course, you know, you were going over and, you know, we knew how you were going over with him. And I just thought, you know, this is a point where we weren't shedding blood anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we're PG. And I just didn't want to hear that because it made no sense to me, especially when there's a title match involved. And
yes.
I was just still, you know, it was still instilled in me that when you get hit over the head with a metal pipe, you know, you bleed.
Because we were in a cage, too.
When we were in a cage, it was like, you know, it just made sense. And so I decided.
Yeah, the finish was that I had some kind of a brass knuckle or a pipe on top of the
cage. Yeah, it was a pipe
cage,
that you reach off the top of the cage.
And you were
going
to powerbomb me off the top rope, but I
but
grabbed
bashed
the pipe
me,
and
right.
hit you with it.
Yeah. So anyway, so I ended up, you know, I did what I thought was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I shed a little blood for business and. Of course, I got hard weight as well. So
I think we tried to mask it as being hard weight. Yeah.
So I'm just kind of bleeding all over the place. But yeah, so we.
But let me say this though. It was a really good match.
It was a great match, man. It was a good cage match.
I remember there was some great stuff in there.
It was. I can't believe that we had to deal with grief over that, man. We did.
Right.
You know, what kills me too is, you know, I got, of course, you got the big fine.
Well, let's slow down a bit. So okay. So we come back through the curtain and we've had this great cage match. Mm-hmm. And it was like you said, as the heel beat Batista for the title.
Right.
Come back through the curtain and then there's a lot of yelling and screaming going on.
It's very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable because Dave had, you know, there was some blood involved. So Vince said, I'm not going to talk about this with any of you guys. Right. I'll see you next week and I'll decide what your punishment is. No, I called him on the way home.
Uh-huh.
And I called him.
You weren't very nice about your, where was your phone call?
I was like, listen, Vince, you know, I'll take responsibility for it, but this match was great. Like, I'm the vet. And he's like, shut up, F off. I don't want to talk to you. I'll talk to you next week. Go F yourself. But the call was 18 seconds long. That was it. Boom. So we have a whole European tour. And we got to worry about what's going to happen on Monday.
Oh, man.
So do you remember Monday? TV finishes and they lead us into an office.
Yeah. So so they've got this monitor set up in front of a mirror and we're sitting down like three kids in trouble with Vince pacing behind us. Yes. He has like a toothpick in his mouth.
Yes. Is it me, Dave, Dean, who was Demolenko, who was the producer of the match, and Mike Chioda, who was the ref.
And
Johnny Ace.
Ace was in there, right? Yeah. So Vince is pacing back like the detective and we're being interrogated.
Yeah.
And then they start playing the playbacks in slow motion with the highlights, like it's a space, like the alien,
real UFOs. Here's the UFO, and they show the little white circle in the right corner where you're supposed to look to see where the UFO is in the sky.
Right.
That's what they had around Batista's hand and Batista's forehead. And
slow motion.
Yeah, slow motion.
We know what we did. We know what we did. What's the consequences?
Do you remember there was a camera angle from like the back of the arena that I've never seen before?
No, where did that camera come from?
It was like
from?
A secret, like that. That's why, like,
it was
you never,
Big Brother. It was the Big Brother camera.
It was. Yeah. You never pick your nose in the arena because someone's always filming you.
Right.
So yeah, they Dave just said over and over again, slow motion. Here it is one way, and here it is another way, and here it is another way, and it's like you said, we get it. There's blood involved. We did it. Now, you had told me earlier in the day that I'm going to get some blood, get some color. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, man, you know, whatever you want to do.
Right, right.
Just, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I didn't really get much more into it than that.
Right.
So I kind of knew, but didn't really know.
Yeah. And it shouldn't have fallen on you. And it was kind of, you know, it was my choice and it was me kind of being rebellious. Mm-hmm. I knew we weren't supposed to do it, but to me, I was just, it just felt like the right thing to do. And I was really kind of a little bitter about the way the direction we were going with the company. I wasn't on board. I wasn't part of the program. And so I was being a little rebellious and I knew I would get consequences, but I thought I would get the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think they would be as harsh as they were.
So Vince is there and he's like, I could fire you, but that would be too easy.
Yeah. Right.
He said, tell him what he said.
And he starts passing out fines. And did he give you guys first?
No, you were first.
Was I first? So my fine was $100,000.
I will never forget that.
My heart dropped, man, because I thought it was going to be like 25 grand. I thought that was going to be like harsh. Like, and I knew it was going to sting. And when he said 100 grand, I was just heartbroken. I literally think that he sucked the life out of me that day. That's when
really?
I felt. I think that's the day that I knew I was, you know, things were never going to be the same.
Wow. Yeah, interesting. We've never really talked about this
before. No, it really, because I felt like I did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I did what was good for the, I did the right thing. I did what, you know, it was good business.
Mm-hmm.
This was the stuff that was instilled in us that we were supposed to do. This is what makes our business special. This what makes us, a brotherhood. We do this for our company. We do this for our fans. And he just literally sucked the life out of me by punishing me for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it broke my heart. It broke my heart.
Yeah, I like I said, we've never talked about this. And that really, I couldn't believe when he said that.
Yeah, I couldn't.
100 grand. And I honestly, from my perspective, he came to me next and it was like the angel of death, like in Jericho. Because he said, and none of you even called me. And I was like, I called you.
Yeah, like, you did. You did.
He's like, well, not even call me, but you. And so when he was handing those fines, I think I would have, I don't know if I would have got the 100, but I think I would have got, but he ended up, he's like, and you, five grand.
Right.
And I remember I almost started laughing, like, 5 grand. He's like, what are you smiling? I'm like, nothing. And he fined Dean five grand, which, you know, those guys don't make a lot of money.
That Dean, hurt, man.
Hurt Dean. And then Kyoto, 5 grand, too.
Yeah.
And like I said, man, I will say this. As man to man, gained so much respect for that day because you paid everybody's fines.
Yeah, but you know, all of ours. What really broke my heart is Dean, because he was the one guy. He knew nothing about
he
it.
He literally knew nothing.
He
about
knew
it.
Nothing about it, man. He's and it just.
And Vince was on his case, like, you should have known. You should know about these guys.
Yeah,
like, how would he know?
That really sucked. That really hurt me, because Dean's a good dude, man.
Great guy.
He didn't deserve.
And he
that.
Didn't know.
He didn't had no idea, man. He got punished and. I felt like I stabbed him in the back, and he didn't deserve it. It really sucked, man.
And like I said, that's probably the biggest fine I've ever heard of in my life.
It was so ridiculous, man. And it was to prove a point. And it was just, it really did. It broke my heart, man, because I just felt like that was, I did what was right, man. I got punished for it. And I just, that's
and that
what
hurts
I,
too. I mean, I don't care if you're Donald Trump, 100 grand is.
That's a lot of money. You know, I don't know, man.
And that was kind of the thing that at least was the rumor, or maybe you had even said it, was when you started winding down, because I think that was in about 2009, and you left in 10.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why you left was because the PG-13 or PG direction.
I just felt like they went against everything that our business was. You know, I really felt like they were just killing our business, man. They're killing the art form of it, which was what I loved about it. Well, you know, I mean, just things like that. They were going to start doing things that just didn't make sense. Like, you know, you just that was just something that we did, man. That was something we, you know, we kind of bled. You know, this was one of those things.
In certain situations,
very, you know, especially like this, when there's a title involved and a cage match involved.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes things harder for people to really get sucked into it too. They were taking our tools away. They were taking our, you know, art form away. They're robbing us of our tools. Of, you know, this is how we made a living. This is what made us so close, man. This is what made, these were our little secrets. You know, this is what made us special. This is what made fans respect us. Because I still say this, when I think the guys today, they're never going to have the same respect, because we went to war. We went to war and we bled for our fans, and we, you know, we did all this and that, and it was harsh. We brutalized ourselves, you know, to entertain them, and they respected us for that. The guys nowadays, even if they're willing to do it, they can't. You know, they can't go to war like we did.
Interesting. Interesting.
So I don't think the respect factor will ever be there. It won't be the same. I don't think so.
How did you find when you finally did come back after 4 years?
You know, like I said, it was weird at first, but really because the crowd was just so strange, man. I just didn't get, like, some of the random chants. And they just started chanting random stuff in the middle of matches for no reason.
Like
they
what? Weren't
even, like,
yes, or
like they saw, you know, in the middle of, CM Punk for, and, you know, a match that even after he left the company, we'd be out there having a match, or even, not even just my match, other matches, CM Punk, you know, like, why? I don't get it.
Right.
You know why? I get that they miss him, but why are you chanting his name now? You know,
did you feel, as far as, like, you know, the old PG-13 or PG rules now, did you have any time where you felt handcuffed by that?
Yes, I mean, somewhat. Not so much, though. I mean, I actually, you know, it was even a couple times when I asked Vince if I could do this or that, and surprisingly, he said yes. I mean, really, like, just simple things like nut shots.
Wow, because those are pretty taboo stuff.
Yeah, no, there's stuff like, is there any way we can get away with a nut shot? Yeah, I think it fits the situation. I was like,
wow.
I just ran. I'd leave Gorilla. I'd just run out, you know, before he had time to think
mind.
About it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a couple of things, he let us get away with, and I was actually surprised. Of course, you know, there's no blood involved anywhere, but I never was really in that match where it was necessitated blood.
You know? Yeah, and these are even little things, too, like, you know, heel tactics, like using the ref or, pushing the ref into the ropes so the guy falls on the top rope. Like, that stuff is all gone, too.
Yeah.
You know, they say it's hard to be a heel now.
Right.
Because you can't use a lot of those tools that we used to use all the time, you know?
So. It is what it is. And I mean, I guess, you know, I didn't notice it that much, but I kind of, you know, I always reached for, you know, the golden ring. I always, you know, wanted to see what I could get away with. And if I can get away with it, I will, if I can bring something back.
Well, and you also have a little bit of leeway because you have proved yourself. And in this day and age in WWE, there's a lot of guys that haven't.
Yeah.
And that's why they love having Batista back or Jericho back or Brock or whoever.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of guys that really can do that.
Yeah. Another, you know, what I noticed as well is there's not a lot of guys there who question what they're being asked to do. They don't say, well, this doesn't make sense.
That's
they don't
right.
go and talk to Vince. They don't, you know, talk to the agent and say, I don't like this, man. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel right.
And questioning is not a bad thing.
Not at all.
Doesn't make you a jerk to do that.
It's no, funny. You should, man. You should participate. You know, this is your character. You have to be protective. Be protective of your character, of your storyline.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's, I'll never forget Shawn Michaels saying, this is what's most important to me. My match, my storyline.
Yeah.
My match, my storyline. What everybody else is doing is their business.
Yeah.
This is what's important to me.
That's a great point. You know?
Absolutely.
You know, it is cool that you came back, and it is cool that you still love the business.
Yeah.
What do you think, so you mentioned you might want to come back in the future.
Yeah.
What do you have coming up as far as, are you doing another movie? What else is going on?
I'm gonna do, it's weird, man, because I'm starting to get, the doors are opened
I'm
up
sure
a little
now.
Bit. Yeah, and so we'll see. But I'm definitely going to do a remake of Kickboxer, which, you know, you're a fan of 80s movies.
Absolutely. The Van Damme.
So we're going to remake that. Right now, the script is not suitable for a remake. So they're trying to revamp the script, so it's been pushed back. But we are going to do that.
When you say we are going to do, is this something that you've spearheaded?
No. Okay. I actually, it's the same producers from Riddick.
Mm.
And this is like one of the first roles I've gotten offered to me. I didn't have to go on audition.
Wow.
They were familiar with me from Riddick. I auditioned for Riddick.
Mm-hmm.
So they offered me the role. I'm playing the updated Tung Po.
Nice. Who's going to be the hero?
There's, his name is Alan Musawi, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
He's not, I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, but he's not a huge name,
mm-hmm.
but, they really believe that he's going to be a big action star in the future. So,
cool.
But there's a few, like Tony Jaa is going to be in it, which, mm-hmm. you know, he's well established. GSP, George St. Pierre is going to be in it. It's got a solid cast, man. It's they're not going to do it on a super high budget, but I'm kind of just looking for it. It's just, you know, I'm a fan of that stuff,
fun
so
to
I'm
kind
of
right?
excited about it. But the script right now, just because you know, stuff that worked back then is, you know, in this day and age, it's just not going to work. It's just going to be too hokey cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to, you know, to bring the script up to date right now.
But you got a lot of stuff. I can see the doors opening because, like we said, being in one of the biggest movies of the summer and having a great part, great character.
Yeah.
Two final questions. One. What's your favorite match that you ever had, if you had to choose one?
I actually had, man, it's heartbreaking to me because, you know, nobody's going to see it other than the people who were there. But I had a match, and you'll appreciate this. But I got to work Rey Mysterio as a heel in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
But it was on a house show.
Yeah.
But we just pulled out all the stops, man. I mean, Rey kicked out of the bomb, and at that time, there was, you know, nobody had, but we just wanted to pull it out and just, you know, give the fans, you know, because Ray's their hero.
Yeah.
And it was my one and only opportunity to work with him as a heel in Mexico. And I begged for the match because it wasn't on the card.
Mm-hmm.
I called Ace, please, please, please let me work. Because I was going to be leaving the company soon. I really wanted this. I wanted this as a part of my career because otherwise I wouldn't have had it. But by far, it was probably the best match of my career.
And such a great performer, Mysterio.
Yeah,
he's such an amazing. It was kind of
an emotional thing too because I came back and it was at that time there was a lot of guys coming on, younger guys coming on board.
Yeah,
and Taker was very emotional about the match
mm-hmm.
and put it over.
Really
put over the fact that I wanted Rey to be their hero. Rey was their hero, and I wanted to make sure that they got their hero.
Right.
And put over the fact that we went out there and gave them a pay-per-view match, and I put Rey over in a big way.
Yeah, clean.
And Taker was really emotional about it, too, which made me very emotional about it, which made the whole thing kind of special.
Yeah,
even more
well, I mean,
special.
That's the Fonz,
he appreciated that.
He's,
you know?
he's the most respected guy
absolutely
in history. You worked with him at a Mania, too.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, by far, yeah. That was when I really felt like I came into my own.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I had done stuff up to then, had big moments, big matches, but that was the match that really kind of, I just felt like I could stand on my own. This is when I could, that match led me to making other guys look good. You know, when you're get that point where mm-hmm. you can make other guys look good, when you can build, you're a big enough star now that you can build other guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when I felt like I had finally earned that. you know,
in that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's when you do that, the Taker match at WrestleMania,
it's a special thing.
It's the
thing,
main
man.
Event.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a special really thing. Yeah. Okay. I was telling him because we, there was a little bit of, you know, grief about, you know, the last WrestleMania and stuff. And I was like, it doesn't matter
the
where
you, that you just had.
Yeah. Well, really about the lineup of the card. And it's like, to me, it doesn't matter where you are on the card. If Undertaker's in WrestleMania, he's the main event.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's the main event.
Yeah.
So last question, what's your favorite lunchbox that you have?
I have.
Dave has a huge lunchbox collection, and I've seen him collect them from around the world.
And at this point still, it's a 1967 Green Hornet lunchbox, and I love it so much because it's got Kato on it. It was Bruce Lee. It's kind of, I don't know, it's my weird connection there. But I'm after this goddamn 1954 Superman lunchbox.
Okay.
And I've seen some of them come up for sale, but I just haven't found the right one. And but
is it like super rare?
It's not super rare, but the thing is they were so popular with the kids, so most of them, you know, when you give kids something, they beat it up after that. Finding them in good condition is really hard to do. So, but there's one I'm actually looking at now. I'm praying that the answer to that question in a few days will be my 1954 Superman. But we'll see, man. That's a few days down the road.
Yeah. Well, Dave, man, it's great talking to you, dude.
Thanks, man. Thanks
really,
for
really
me,
cool
bro.
Have you here. And congratulations on all your success.
Oh, man.
Thank
you as well, dude. You're killing it, man.
Thanks.
You're killing it, Torin. You're a rock star, dude. you're a bona fide rock star, man.
Well, I appreciate it.
That's crazy, man.
All the time
you're playing stadiums.
When I would show up with my shirt off and just wandering around in a daze.
Right.
I used to say that all the time. You look like a rock star, Jericho. And I was like, yeah.
Well, that's because you'd always, you know, you were always that guy, man. You were drinking hard. You were living it, man. You were drinking hard.
Trying
night,
to stay sane.
Shirt open, drinking hard, yelling at all the rookies. How come not drinking?
Yeah, I still do that
we're
now.
Door, man. You gotta have fun.
They don't like me as much anymore because I still do that. Right. Vince is like, you got to calm down. Those kids are not the same generation. You can still have fun. That's what I like hanging out with the Samoan guys,
man.
With Usos and Reigns. At least they'll go and have a drink.
Well, they know, man. They were brought up the right
That's
way.
Right.
They're old school.
They
man.
Came in old school way. Yeah. Totally, man. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Hey, thanks to Dave Bautista. Did a great job as Drax in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, the blockbuster of the summer. Great job in the WWE. Looking forward to hearing what he's going to do next. Man, what a cool, cool two-part conversation. Thanks to all of you for joining me. Thanks to all of you as well for picking up the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Debuted at number 54 on the Billboard charts. Big thanks to all of you who bought it. Listen, it's on Amazon right now for $5.99. What are you going to wait for? I mean, come on. That is a great bargain for some great rock and roll music. If you love Fozzy, you're going to love this record. If you've never heard of Fozzy, now's your chance. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to do you a solid, play you a little tidbit. I'm going to play you the title track from Do You Want to Start a War right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. So crank it up, baby. Take a man. great tune. That's going to be the second single. Working on the video this week as well, doing some edits for that. You will see that very, very soon. And you will see us next month when we hit the road with Theory of a Dead Man. The tour starts September 17th. There's some headlining gigs on that tour. Once again, I'll run them past you. September 18th at Abilene at the Lucky Mule. September 25th at Munchies in Beckley, West Virginia. September 28th at Parkersburg, West Virginia at Sixpence. October 1st at Pierre's in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And returning to New York City, headlining the show, Fozzy at the Gramercy Theater, October 5th. Come on down. Check us out, man. And another big thanks to all of you who've been doing your online shopping through my Amazon link. It totally helps out this show, and it's really easy to find. How much easier can it be? Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links in the USA, the UK, and Canada. It's really easy. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees. No hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. So that is it. Another great edition of Talk is Jericho. And we'll see you next week. But in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. But guess what? Next week, I've got my biggest guest ever on Talk is Jericho. You think you know who I'm talking about? I'm not going to play any games here. Next week on Talk is Jericho, I got him. It's time to play the game! Bow! Time to play the game! Bow! Yeah, you know who that is. Next week on Talk is Jericho. Who loves you, baby? Yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.